free energy now.
Imagine a world in which each home has its own power generator that obtains its energy in such a way that no fuel has to be added. Imagine every vehicle being able to run without ever stopping for fuel. Imagine each appliance having its own power source that never has to be recharged. That is the world of the future. Join with us now as we track our progress towards such a world.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sterling Allen. You can join us online at freeenergynow.net, where you can find a list of past guests, download those interviews, see who's scheduled for upcoming shows, and if you're listening live, you can see the call-in numbers. We're joined this evening, February 16, 2009, by Andy Cruz, co-founder of Southwest Wind Power, Inc., the world leader in residential wind power products. Southwest Wind Power has been a pioneer in the industry and presently leads in sales. They have been in the global top 100 clean energy technologies listing since nearly the beginning. In the spirit of full disclosure, I should mention that I have a vested interest in this technology and will be featuring it tomorrow on a nationally televised program in which I will be discussing a few energy efficiency and renewable energy generation technologies presently available for consumers. Also joining us this evening is my associate, Ty Robinson, who also has a vested interest in this technology, having been a distributor for them for some 5 years. Ty and I are here actually both on cell phones outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee, in his Suburban. He is converted to run on clean fuels, hydrogen, natural gas, ethanol, as well as gasoline if none of those are available. But there are enough ethanol filling stations around the country that this shouldn't ever be a problem. Ty is also going to be on the Everyday with Marcus and Lisa program tomorrow, following me, where he will demonstrate this vehicle. In the back of this Suburban, we are hauling one of Southwest Wind Power's 300-watt turbines called the Air Breeze for me to show tomorrow live on 200 TV stations around the country. We'll only have about a minute or less to talk about it, but tonight's one-hour interview is in part preparation for me to make that 1 minute more interesting and accurate. So thanks for listening in as we bone up for tomorrow. Andy and Ty, welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Great. Sorry for those technical difficulties. I accidentally gave you the number I call in on rather than the number you're supposed to call in on. So that's why we have the problem.
Well, at least it's got it all worked out now.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if we're going to be able to have Ty in on the call here because we're here at a rest stop outside of Chattanooga, and it's cold outside. And the car
it's a little bit cold up here in Flagstaff as well.
Yeah, what's the temperature there?
It's about, I think it's about in the 30s right now.
Yeah, I think we're probably just above 30 down here, a little further south from you.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens if it gets as it gets later in the evening, of course, it'll probably get down in the 20s or so. That's usually where it ends up in the early mornings.
Well, let's talk about Southwest Wind Power. You guys are a leader in the industry. You are one of the primary developers and sellers of renewable energy, of the wind energy technology for the residential market. And talking about technical difficulties, as you answer that question, I'm going to have to switch off and use Ty's phone. I'm on a AC generator, but for some reason it doesn't seem to be charging my phone, so I'm going to swap phones with him.
Okay.
So go ahead and start talking. I know the story, but the audience doesn't, so while I switch phones, you talk.
Well, yes, we are one of the largest manufacturers of small wind turbines. We're located here in Flagstaff, Arizona. We have a little over 100 employees. I think we have about 110 employees now, and most of them are located here. And then we also have some employees in a new sales office that we opened up in Germany. It's our first kind of real launch into the German market. We've been there for a number of years selling products, but it's the first time where we've got a presence there now. So I just kind of give you a background of, the business. We've been around for about 22, 23 years, in manufacturing our wind turbines. We started in a little garage east of Flagstaff, just David and I, and it got just an idea, you know, and it's really blossomed into something that's, geez, we're all over the world now. We're in about 88 countries with our products. We have distributors in 88 countries, and you can find our machines now in over 120 countries. So it's got quite a global presence in the marketplace for off-grid and even now on-grid wind turbines. In total, we've probably manufactured a little over 140,000 wind turbines. These, of course, are our machines. They range in size from about 200 to 300 watts up to about 3 kilowatts. All of our machines are designed for producing electricity from the wind, and they're either used to charge batteries or they're used to just supplement a person's electric, you know, their electric bill, so they don't use a battery. You'll find them on sailboats. We've got them all over, you know, gosh, just about every international race that happens has our small wind turbines. That's the air and the air marine products. I've installed them on the beaches of Mexico or Cambodia, or, you know, we've got them supplying power for a family in a yurt in the middle of Mongolia. So, I mean, just the applications are virtually endless. I mean, where do you have a need for a little electricity and you've got the wind, you've got the perfect, you know, market for our products.
Now, your turbine, you've gone through a lot of iterations in improving the design, the interface and whatnot. What version would you say you're on at this point? Version 8.0, 10.0, what?
Well, you know, we've got several different models out there. There's, you know, in the early days we had the Windseeker. It went through several evolutions in its history until it finally faded it away in right around 2000. The Air, which is the one that you've got on your, you know, that you're using as you go across the country, that one's gone through really its fourth generation. It's the original was a 303, then went to a 403, and then the Air X, and now Air Breeze. So, and within all of those generations, we're always looking for how do we tweak it? How do we make it, you know, produce more energy? How do we make it more reliable? How do we make it quieter? You know, we do all those things to try to, you know, meet the customer's needs.
And talking to Ty this evening, he was saying that the Air Breeze starts spinning at about 7 miles per hour and actually kind of maxes out at 12 miles per hour so that you're getting the full energy conversion at 12 miles per hour. And basically everything above that is not going to give you any additional power. What was your reason for...
Well, that's not quite true. What we use at 12 miles an hour is really the optimum output. It will produce, you know, and we say optimum in terms of that's what it's really cost effective with other technologies where the investments you're making in the product, that's the ideal wind speed. It'll actually continue to increase its output clear up to like, oh, I think it's 27, 28 miles an hour. And that's when it will flatten out and it will continue to produce that, you know, maximum output, which is about, on the Breeze, it's about 280 watts or something like that. But it'll do that up to hurricane force winds. It's just, it has a really unique, set of technologies inside of it. It's what we call electronic stall regulation. We can actually sense the wind speed at any wind speed and then adjust the turbine and maintain a certain, you know, speed and output.
Now, let's talk about the hurricane thing. My understanding is that, at least on some designs, I don't know if it's Air Breeze, it'll actually hinge down or away from the wind so it's not going straight into the wind anymore at super high speeds.
Yeah, that's our other technology. That's the Whisper does that. That's a pretty common process that most wind turbines use is what we call furling. Furling is where you take, the tail, and it might fold away. Or, you know, in this case, we're using the alternator head. It's actually folding out of the wind. however that process is, it's just trying to protect itself in a passive format. You know, it's a passive form that does that. So it's doing that, generally mechanical, but it's doing it not without electronics. Where the industry is moving, however, is towards, I call it air breezes or the new SkyStream. It's really, we don't use a mechanical device because that adds, that's wear and tear on the pipe. It adds maintenance to it. There's a lot of factors that, will reduce its overall life. And so using electronic style regulation where you use the alternator itself and just the magnets inside the alternator to limit its speed, you reduce wear and you increase the life of the design.
Now, when you use magnets to limit the speed, don't you risk burning up the motor in high wind speed?
I'm sorry, say that again?
If you're using magnets to limit the speed, don't you risk burning up the motor in high wind speeds?
No, we have, that could happen if you didn't design the product correctly, and that's true, you could. We have sensors within the design, the thermocouples basically, that are always sensing that temperature, and it's not like we're putting on brakes all the time. We're actually taking the energy, we're loading the alternator, but we're pushing that energy into the battery or into the house or whatever it might be. So the alternator really doesn't heat up. And so we're always watching that. And, you know, if it ever does get too hot, then it just goes into shutdown mode. It just says, all right, you know, let's shut down for a little while, let's cool off. But then the brakes completely come on, and then so it'll go down from 300 RPM down to, you know, 5 RPM so it can just rest for a moment.
When you say the brakes come on, there's an actual braking type of mechanism in there in addition to the magnetic.
No, it's all magnetic. Everything is completely magnetic. It's amazing technology. And we patented this in the late 90s. We've got in air, we have, there's probably 70,000 of the airs are using this technology, and we have about 4,500 SkyStreams now using it. So there's a lot of, and we're seeing even larger companies starting to employ. There's a 100 kilowatt machine that's now using electronic style regulation. So it's a unique technology, but it's the future, but it's not, you know, magical at all. It's well proven.
Well, motor and generator technology is kind of a different baby than wind technology. Was that something that was developed outside and then you guys licensed it, or was that developed in-house?
It was completely designed in-house. The original alternator really was based on the old Ford alternator, you know, from around the 70s, really. And it evolved away from that. So the only thing that was really left on it is just the stator and laminates itself. Everything else about that thing is custom designed. So we're looking at that alternator, how it can produce power. And then we're matching it to what the wind speed would be doing. And so we're trying to match those as carefully as we possibly can so we can get optimum energy output.
One of the issues that apparently happens with wind energy technology is that the generator technology that is able to harness the lower wind speeds, the breeze type of things, versus the amounts the generator that's required to harness the stiffer winds, it's a much heavier load. And these big wind turbines will actually have like three different generator systems and they gear between them. Are you able to handle all of those speeds with just one generator?
Yeah, and actually most of them, they do basically the same thing we do. What we essentially do is it's a variable speed turbine, and what we're doing is we're taking the when the wind is produced now, when you produce energy from the wind, every time you double the wind speed, you increase the energy potential by 8 times. It's a Cupid function, so
right.
You get 8 times when you double the RPM of a generator. Usually, you're only getting double the output. But what we're doing, and this is what large wind turbines do, in order to optimize your output, you go through a series of conversions of the electricity, and you also use what's called peak power tracking. So you're always managing the the load of the alternator and trying to optimize that output. So when the turbine produces energy, it's producing wild AC power, and then that energy is then converted to DC, and so that just cleans up the frequency, the voltage, and stuff like that. And then we reinvert it back to AC if it's for a wind turbine or for an AC application. But in either case, we're always looking. We have a microprocessor on board that's always looking at that turbine and looking at the RPM and saying, okay, well, how do I need to load up or let down, or what do I need to do in order to always find that spot?
And when you talk about the microprocessors and AC-DC inverters and whatnot, those are a lot of different technologies, and those were also developed in-house?
Yes, we've designed everything. We have a team of about 10 engineers full-time, and they are devoted towards the development of small wind turbines. We're looking at, we have composite engineers, power electronics, magnetic specialists, physicists, mechanical engineers, just all the above that are working on this.
So when you're talking, is it fair to say that Southwest Wind Turbines, your specialty is residential wind turbine solutions?
And that number or that name expands out a lot farther than just your typical home. It's either an on-grid home or an off-grid home, but it's also commercial offshore platforms. I mean, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico, every offshore natural gas or oil platform virtually has an air on it. You know, using it, it's being out there. It's out there used to operate provide power for the SCADA systems. Or it's for a yurt in Mongolia, or it's for a sailboat, or it's for, you know, you've got them on top of mountains, in Phoenix even, we've got them on top of some of the mountains there. That are providing the electricity that operates the paging systems for a lot of different companies.
So is there an upper end of what you will tackle versus what you'll let GE or other manufacturers take on?
Well, we love this one niche that we're in, and it's the small scale, and small these days is 100 kilowatt and smaller, and we're in the 3 kilowatts, so we're really small compared to a lot of them, and you know, even if we were at 100 kilowatts, the GEs wouldn't even bother. I think their average machine now is 1.5 megawatts.
Mm-hmm.
So it's so much larger than what we would do. So there's really not a, you know, our whole world is completely different from the GEs.
Let's talk about price really quick. One of the things that's exciting about the Southwest Wind Turbine is that in some of the more expensive energy markets like Hawaii, New York, they're looking at a return on investment of 3 to 4 years to buy one of these before it pays for itself from energy savings.
Absolutely, yeah. But when a person's looking to invest in a small wind turbine, first of all, you've got to look at the application. Am I living off the grid or on the grid? But for the sake of the discussion, we'll talk about on-grid systems where they don't typically use batteries. These on-grid systems, the economics are based on three factors: the installed price, how much it costs to put the entire machine in the ground, what the wind speed is, which is essentially it's going to tell you, you know, how much energy you're going to be producing for that wind turbine, and then what the local cost of electricity is at that site. And the numbers range all over the place. If you live in the Midwest, you know, it's probably without any incentives. This is before any incentives, and we'll get to those in a minute. It'll probably be closer to 15, 20 years before it would pay for itself. In Hawaii, before any incentives, is probably closer to like 7 or 8 years before any incentives are applied. So, but then we start applying the incentives, and there's all kinds of those out there nowadays. I mean, every state and local and federal government they're all looking at this and saying, hey, you know, this is a great opportunity. We need to create legislation that would support it and create incentives in order to help stimulate that market, because this is the direction that we see that we're moving towards. So you've got, like, in Arizona, for example, the APS rebate. You invest in a small wind turbine, the rebate, I think, is $2.50 a watt. That ends up being a little over $6,000 to get back as a check from APS. Then there's a state incentive, which is it's a tax write-down. It's another $1,000. There's no sales tax. And as of tomorrow, after President Obama, you know, at the federal level, when he signs off this new legislation, there will be yet a new grant program available. It'll be based on 30% of the installed cost of the turbine. So that comes out to another probably $4,000, $5,000. So when you add it all up, and let's say that the total cost, and this is a typical, it's about $14,000, $13,000 to install one of these residential scale turbines. You start adding all these things up, all of a sudden the economics look really good. If that's just what your main, you know, goal is just look at economics. Most people don't buy it for that. They buy it for climate change issues. They're worried about the global warming or energy security issues or whatever else that might be out there.
Right. The early adopters have done more for the cause to get it to become independent, to reduce their footprint on the planet, to green themselves up. But you see a time when that could actually become an economic advantage and not just a green feel-good solution.
That is our number one goal, absolutely. And that's why we're investing so much in engineers and trying to understand the manufacturing processes. How do we streamline? You know, we're always looking at that, you know, how do we get, you know, to parity, grid parity we call it, and then get below that so that, you know, without incentives, these things would eventually be cost-effective at, you know, in 5 or 7 years, or it's just been built into your mortgage and you don't even know about it. All you know is that you got a $5 a month electric bill. I mean, we'd all have to have that.
When we come back from break at the bottom of the hour, I'd like to go into some of the aspects of, you know, where this is going to go in the future and where the when is the price going to break even with existing, like coal or natural gas fire plants, electricity, for example. The trends there are a little bit hard to predict because things are so topsy-turvy right now in the marketplace.
Yeah.
But also, I'm curious how you're doing as a company in this economy.
Yeah, absolutely. Love to answer those questions.
Okay. So after the bottom of the hour, we will come back.
Tom Bruckner, Chief Financial Officer at Strategic Asset Conservation, invites you to join him for the Safe Money Hour. 60 minutes of intelligent, age-appropriate, financial wisdom, and uncommon sense about your retirement money. The Safe Money Hour, Friday at 9 a.m.
Imus in the morning. Dr. Laura middays. Bill O'Reilly afternoons. Only on KFNX.
CNN Radio, I'm Greg Black. And today, Californians have been dreading Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger preparing 20,000 layoff notices for state workers. He says they'll go out in tomorrow's mail if state lawmakers don't come up with a new budget tonight. President Obama heads to Denver tomorrow. That's where he'll be signing that $787 billion stimulus plan into law. General Motors picks up another $4 billion check tomorrow from you. It's the next installment of that taxpayer bailout for the automotive industry. They're still removing debris from that Buffalo, New York commuter plane crash site, but the NTSB Steve Chelander says they are making some progress.
They've now got the engines up and on the road. And they're doing further inspection on that, and they'll have them on the truck and ready to go out of here tomorrow.
It's a load off Michael Phelps' mind. A South Carolina sheriff has decided not to file any charges against the Olympic gold medalist for his marijuana escapade at a college party last fall. This is CNN Radio.
Showers heading our way this evening on and off. Probably best chances after midnight with snow in the high country down to 4,000 feet. Showers early tomorrow morning as well, then clearing out. Then we really get sunny and warmer for the rest of the week. By Saturday, close to 80. Jim out. KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Currently in downtown Phoenix, it's 58 degrees.
Are you hoping the IRS doesn't find you?
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Have you missed 2 or more years of filing your tax returns? The IRS has budgeted over $3 billion to enforce collections of past due taxes. They could garnish your wages or place a lien on your property. In fact, they will place levies or liens on more than 3 million taxpayers this year. Will you be one of them? You can stop all this by making one call today to the Tax Resolution Group. Our clients never have to meet or even talk with the IRS. Our ex-IRS agents have over 100 years combined experience in IRS collection tactics. They use that insider knowledge to go to work for you. Call for a free no-obligation consultation. 800-297-0379. Put an end to your IRS problems. For your free consultation, call now. 800-297-0379. 800-297-0379.
Nobody ever says, it's just cancer, get over it.
Or, snap out of it, it's just diabetes.
And who would ever say, it's nothing serious, it's just heart disease?
But you do hear those words about people living with another serious illness.
It's called depression, and it threatens the lives of more than 15 million Americans.
Like heart disease, its symptoms can be misleading.
Like diabetes, it's biologically based.
And like cancer, it can be fatal.
So what we should say is what doctors, medical professionals, and other experts say. Depression can be treated.
Which is why those who have overcome it say, getting treatment is like getting your life back.
Depression is real, but so is hope. Learn more at depressionisreal.org.
Supported by a coalition of mental health organizations, including the American Psychiatric Foundation and the Depression and Bipolar Support Alliance.
Gonna make a change in some lives today. We will work for not for profit. Grab the movement from the world today. We want to make the world a little bit better. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now. Eagle Mountain, Utah.
We'll always take donations there for sure. Or some hard work volunteering. Give a little and you get back more. You know the future's looking brighter. We just want to help the world today.
Free energy now.
That's our toll-free call-in number. If you're listening live, 866-536-1100. If you have any questions for our guest this evening, Andy Cruz, he is the co-founder of Southwest Wind Power. They are the world leader in residential small-scale wind power products. And actually, those of you in the Phoenix area would be interested to know that they are based in Flagstaff. Andy, welcome back to the show, and let's talk about Flagstaff for a second and your operations. Go ahead.
Oh, well, for those that haven't been up here, it's a great little mountain community. I literally grew up here. It's the reason why Southwest Wind Power is located here. You know, it's a town of about 65,000 people. And largely kind of more of a tourist community, but we also have a lot of industry as well.
How much of your operation is taken care of there? Do you do all the manufacturing or just a portion or what?
We are really what you would look at our facility in Flagstaff as is an assembly facility. So the parts for our products are made all over the world, but for the most part, you know, North America. And they all come to Flagstaff, and then where we assemble and test and then ship them out, you know, back out to the rest of the world.
Okay.
We actually ship to half of our business is actually international. And so we have trucks coming in here, you know, all the time going to, you know, any sort of different country around the world.
You've got I-40 goes right through there, right through town.
Yep, absolutely. Makes a great thoroughfare when we're shipping containers out to the LA, to the LA port. So it's kind of unusual. We do import a few components from China, but we actually export a lot of product to China. They use a lot of our wind turbines for telecommunication projects and they have different islands off the coastline that they're using to power for small villages. They like our American wind turbines better than their Chinese wind turbines.
Last week we interviewed SkyBuilt, which is a portable renewable energy technology for the most part and for installing kind of a Dell plug-and-play type of approach to renewables. And I think they use your turbine as part of their, one of the components they plug-and-play for areas that have good wind resources.
That's correct, yes. SkyBuilt, they're based there in Virginia, and they take shipping containers and they make them into these portable renewable energy power stations, if you will. And there's a big demand right now. I've done a couple of DOD, Department of Defense, conferences where I'm working with the military with them as well, and we're all talking about how we can extend provide more renewable energy power into these remote areas rather than, you know, the military having to ship in diesel fuel all the time. So, it's really working very well through them and expanding to, you know, to even a different market.
Talking about small scale, they recently came up with a suitcase size package that can actually be brought and checked into luggage in an airplane and then deployed. You undo this thing and you've got a solar blanket and you've got one of your Southwest wind turbines in there to provide a combination of kind of a hybrid or tribrid type of approach that they're using. So that's a pretty small turbine to be able to
see them. They're really amazing, some of the new things that we're coming out with. But it's all about, you know, two things are converging here. What we're seeing is this, that the electronics and a lot of the equipment that our military is using less and less power. But at the same time, our technologies are becoming more and more powerful. And so we're really working this where we can take smaller systems and run these remote powered systems. You know, we're using LEDs instead of incandescent bulbs, for example, which use just a fraction of the energy that the incandescents once used.
Yeah, I know another industry we're involved with is energy efficiency, where they'll use a motor controller, for example, on a motor. You have an escalator that's running all the time, and it'll pull the same amount of energy whether it's full or empty, which is silly. So these guys have a motor controller that only delivers as much as the motor needs at any given moment. And so what that enables you to do from a renewable generation point of view is it makes it so that you don't have to have nearly as big a resource to provide energy for a home, for example, because now your peak usage, for example, when you turn on your fridge or your freezer, because the power is being much more widely managed, and you're soft starting versus just kick starting or turning these things. Normally, when you turn on a motor, it goes to full speed and full pulling of energy immediately, and that's when you get the real, you know, lights dim out as you turn on one of these big motors, and theirs enables that to go away. So now you don't have to have 10 panels on your roof. You can get away with, you know, 3 or 4, for example.
Absolutely right. You're taking your peaks and you're leveling them off. So you're levelizing your loads, and that's a really, really good thing to do. You know, it's just that we've always looked at electricity and energy, even with fossil fuels. Just, we really didn't worry about the efficiency because the energy component was so inexpensive. And now we're realizing, wow, you know, it's becoming more and more expensive is one problem. You know, the second one is that, getting the energy is becoming more difficult. So we're realizing that maybe we just need to think more about, well, how do we consume that energy? Be more efficient at it. And then we can really protect that having that low cost energy as long as we, you know, are paying more attention to this through efficiency.
Hey, Google did a projection of where renewable energy is going, so we can actually get rid of our dependence on fossil fuels. And third of their curve was from energy efficiency.
Yeah. There are some fantastic, I don't have the statistics right away or in front of me, but there was something like, you know, I know during the Bush years, they were talking about a need for, oh, I don't know, how many dozens of nuclear power plants. And, you know, and someone did a study that if we just replaced our incandescent bulbs, if everybody just replaced like two or three incandescent bulbs in their house with a compact fluorescent, we would eliminate the need for those power plants. And I don't know the exact statistic, but it was something that was just phenomenal that we just don't think about those things. And gosh, if we did, you know, it's amazing what we could do.
Let's talk about where we were at before we went to break. With this economy where things are kind of topsy-turvy, how is your company doing?
So, you know, we're knock on wood here. So far, so good. We, you know, our sales are still strong. This is the lowest time of the year as well because not a lot of people want to install wind turbines when it's 30 degrees below zero out, you know, in northern Maine or something. So, but overall, the sales are actually they're significantly higher than they normally are, you know, this time of year. So we're still feeling pretty good about, you know, the market, and we're hoping that the stimulus package will continue that because, you know, we know that this is not going to, we're not going to get out of this anytime soon, this economic mess. So we're hoping that not only do we see the stimulus package helping keep the business going, this industry going, but also will expand it. And that's our goal, of course, as manufacturers. We find the, you know, independent people around the country that are, you know, dealers for our products, and that's how they make their living in these rural areas.
Is it fair to compare the computer industry to the renewable energy industry, where we will see things get smaller, cheaper, over the long run? It would continue to drop in price, become more energy compact, so that even though the stimulus might be helpful right now, eventually it would be unnecessary.
Yeah, on solar, I think we'll probably continue improvement in that. We'll continue to see the small wind turbines, or see solar panels become more efficient. They're right now about 17-18% on average. I think we can get them up into the 40s and 50s, and so we'll see that energy density improve. Wind turbines, it's a little more difficult because, I mean, it's all based on physics, you know, and wind turbines are a little bit more difficult because we, you know, you got to have that swept area in order to convert it. Our alternators are already in the 80s to 90% efficient, and our inverters are already in the 90%, so we're probably not going to see a lot of size enhancement, you know, changes there. But what we will see is just absolute manufacturing, you know, where we can get the cost way out of it and just drive it down, you know, through the component integration. That's what we do with SkyStream. We integrate the components to minimize the number of connections and boxes that you need in order to for the system to work. But also, it's like, how do you get to the point where it's like a, you know, it's probably not the best analogy these days to use, but like the automobile industry, you know, how you mass produce these things for, you know, a fraction of the cost. So that's going to be the next step for us, I think. And we'll see that. We'll see the cost go from right now where, you know, small wind is about 14 cents a kilowatt hour. You know, we'll probably see it drop into the 7 or 8 cents a kilowatt hour.
One thing I'd like to get back to after break here is to talk about some of the other products in the market, other wind products, and how yours compare to those.
Absolutely.
I plugged the ScanGauge 2 into my car in 10 seconds and could read my gas mileage instantly. It helped me save on fuel by improving my driving habits. If my check engine light turns on, I can figure out why without paying a mechanic. This device has saved me money.
The ScanGauge also provides information about engine load, ignition timing, and on my vehicle, it tells me the transmission temperature.
The ScanGauge is manufactured right here in Mesa. Call us at 480-656-3842 or visit us online at ScanGauge.com. Again, that's 480-656-3842.
If you or someone you know has a child with autism, you'll be excited to discover the Autism Resource Foundation. With a combination of professional resources, personal experience, passion, and insight, the Autism Resource Foundation is a place where families touched by autism can network and share solutions. Go online to autismresourcefoundation.org and be sure to tune in Sundays at 5 p.m. for Autism Talks, right here on KFNX News Talk Radio 1100. That's Autism Talks, Sundays at 5 p.m.
I joined the National Guard for opportunity.
Over 200 career choices and paid training.
Money for college. A steady paycheck.
Only one thing stood between me and my benefits.
Basic training. I'm not going to lie, it wasn't easy. The obstacle course was really challenging.
Now, I'm a National Guard soldier.
I help my community. I can protect my country.
I'm proud to be on this team.
Because I got stronger.
Because I got to go to college.
The Guard helped me succeed.
Call 1-800-GO-GUARD and ask us how you can prepare for basic training.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Or by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Free energy, now!
So now I'm coming back at you. I am outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee, talking tonight with Andy Cruz, co-founder of Southwest Wind Power, the world leader in residential and small-scale wind power products. Let's talk, Andy, about how your company's products compare to the myriad of other solutions that are out there, and I come across them all the time, new vertical axis wind turbines, horizontal axis wind turbines. It seems like there's as many ways to harness winds as there are people on the planet.
There are a lot of different technology, you know, different methods. And, you know, this is what I like to compare it to is, there's two real distinct industries in the wind world. There's the large wind turbine market, which is the Vestas and the GEs and the Micons and all those guys. And then there's the small wind, which is like ourselves, Southwest Wind Power, Brigie Wind, Integrity. These are other, you know, manufacturers. And so, in the 80s and 90s, you know, all wind turbines were relatively small. They were in the 50 and 60 kilowatt range. And back then we saw this as well. We had this evolutionary process. And there was even a company in the 80s called Flowwind, and they were probably the most commercialized vertical axis wind turbine out there. But there was just, oh, my gosh, if I had a, you know, just as you said, there's a nickel for every, you know, contraption that was out there. You know, I mean, the bottom line is this, you know, these devices exist for one primary purpose, and that purpose is to produce electricity. And the objective, of course, as an industry, is to produce that energy as reliably and as low cost as possible. So that's what the goal is. That's where we're all trying to work towards. So how we convert that energy, you know, from wind, you know, whether it be vertical or horizontal, that's where the big arguments come in. DOE, the Department of Energy, spent hundreds of millions of dollars on vertical axis wind turbines. I think there was actually one machine up in Canada. It was a 3-megawatt vertical axis. The thing was like, you know, just the cylinder, you know, was 320 feet high. So it was just phenomenal how big these things were. At the end of the day, after all the research that was done, after all the testing, all the commercialization, all the incentives, you know, it all came down to basically horizontal axis as a winner. And it's just, you know, there had no other reason except for it just, they couldn't make the numbers work. They just couldn't. And, you know, now fast forward to today, in the small wind world, we're seeing the same thing, vertical axis versus horizontal and upwind and downwind. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, you're going to find the same exact answer is that, you know, the horizontal axis, you know, even though it sounds intriguing to be able to put one of these things on your roof, ultimately it's just the energy isn't there that you need in order to produce electricity at a cost-effective level. And we'll see that. I mean, you know, I don't ever want to be necessarily the critic of all these technologies because I'm the competitor, but I'm just looking at history going, well, you know, if history's going to repeat itself, it's probably going to end up the same way as it did with the big wind.
Now, why is it that wind turbines have gone to fewer blades than in early days when you see the Old West, for example. They'd have, you know, 20 blades going around the perimeter as opposed to just three in most horizontal axis wind turbines nowadays.
You know, strangely enough, the most efficient type of a wind turbine out there is a one blade, and there were actually a few of them that were made, but the dynamics of them just didn't work out. There was an Italian company called Rizzo Cazzoli in the 80s that made one, and then another one called MAN. It's a German company. They made a 1 megawatt machine as well. There's distinct differences now. First of all, the old windmills that you see in the American plains that had all the different blades, that's what we call a drag-style wind turbine. That's the wind hits the blade, and it pushes it around in a circle. And generally, the fastest that windmill can pump is basically whatever the wind speed is blowing. You know, it's a one-to-one ratio, basically. You can't really develop, you know, any more energy out of that based on just this, whatever the wind speed blows. You know, but the difference is that the modern wind turbines use a lift style, kind of an airplane wing, if you will, that's, you know, mounted on the, you know, on the sides. And those actually, they create a lift and push the blade through the wind, you know, or push the blade around in a circle. And they are far more efficient. They can run ratios of 6 and 7 to 1. You can actually go even higher than that, but then they start to get noisy when that happens. So, but you optimize that wind speed, and you can develop a far more amount, you know, far greater amount of energy than you could just with a drag style. So anytime you see
a lift style, why wouldn't 8 blades or more than 3 work better than 3?
Well, in the drag style, you reach a point of what's called solidity, and it gets to the point where it just cannot spin any faster because you're stopping all the wind, and you don't want to stop all the wind. You want, you know, the wind to pass through the blades. And the fewer blades that you had, actually, like the one blade, it had the least amount of turbulence when it operated in one direction because, you know, you didn't have the blade right behind it, you know, interfering in the winds, you know, in the wind current. And so it's actually found that, and a lot of times they went to actually 2 blades, and that was common for quite a while as well, but it also had, the biggest reason why we didn't stick with 2 blades is there's also yawing dynamics. When a blade or wind turbine changes direction in the wind, the 2 blades makes it inherently unbalanced. It can't move, and so when it actually changes direction, it kind of chatters, if you will, you know, as it moves, where a 3 blade actually works it very smoothly. So it's more expensive, but the maintenance and the reliability of that 3 blade machine is actually far greater. So ultimately, that's where they ended up, was just 3 blades, because it was a perfect match between minimal maintenance and operation, you know, just an inefficient operation.
How many styles of wind turbines do you have in your showroom or in your catalog, so to speak, right now?
Well, we have, we have 3 basic product lines. There's the Air, which is a 200-watt machine, the Air Breeze is, and that ranges between 200 and 400 watts. The older Air Xs are 400 watts. Then there's the Whisper line, which is a company we bought from Duluth, Minnesota. We bought the assets of this company. And that machine, there's the Whisper 100 and Whisper 200, which are really designed for battery charging, rural areas, oftentimes water pumping in cabins. And there's the Whisper 500, which is actually our only 2-bladed design. And it's a 3.2 kilowatt machine. It's designed for telecom projects, also for larger, we even do a lot of village power electrification. We do a lot of work in like India with, you know, 10 of those with some PV arrays working together to produce power. And then our newest model, which is SkyStream, that's a 3-bladed machine. It's a little different because it's a downwind design and it doesn't use a tail. It uses the blades to orient itself in the wind. So that's kind of the lineup. That's a 2.4 kilowatt rated machine that comes with the inverter, everything.
Now, when you're talking about these different sizes and whatnot, I imagine on your website and whatnot, you've got all of this spelled out where people can basically mix and match whatever size and, you know, whatever the resources they're trying to match it up to. Let's talk for a second about investment opportunity and dealership opportunity. How does that set up?
Absolutely. Well, you know, investment is where privately held, so we don't take really any investment money. But on the dealer side, there's a great opportunity out there to make money in this world. And we have a whole program. We have actually a full-time training department that helps educate people about not just the mechanics and the aspects of small wind turbines, but also how to sell them, how to make a sale. And we've just had some amazing success stories of people that just have gotten into business and got a 72-year-old former cotton farmer in northwestern Texas, you know, that's just so excited about his business. Him and his son are running this business, and they're selling Skystreams all over Texas. You know, and you basically, it's a process where you go onto our website. It's windenergy.com or skystreamenergy.com, but the easiest one is windenergy.com. And you say you want to sign up to be a dealer, and it takes you through a series of questions. You'll go to a webinar, and if all that works well and you're still very excited about it, because we want you to know exactly what you're getting into, then you go to our it's a 3-day training class where we fly to Flagstaff and you learn all about the products and once you feel comfortable, then we'll set you off on your own and you get into the business.
What about investing?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Investing?
Investing in, within our company or?
Uh-huh.
Well, we're a private company and we don't take any investments in actually. we're pretty happy with the way things are right now.
Okay.
So, but, you know, investing in the business in terms of, as a dealership, then we definitely, we'll help you on that and support you in every possible way. We've got, you know, even cooperative, you know, co-ops where you can share the price of an advertisement and just a lot of different tools that we can use to help you build your business.
What's your best selling line?
It's probably somewhere between the air and the, certain in volume air. We're doing probably 1,200, well, it ranges between 1,200 and 1,700 a month of the little air breezes. Skystream is in terms of volume, it's probably second place. It's doing about 500-600 a month now. And that's continuing to grow as well. So we're seeing that expand. So, but in revenue, I think Skystream is probably the largest piece right now. It's only a couple years old, so we definitely hit that one out of the park. We think we've got a really good winner there.
Well, Andy, we appreciate you coming on the show tonight. We've run out of time, but we've been talking to Andy Cruz of Southwest Wind Power of windenergy.com.
That's correct. Well, thanks for having me on. I really enjoyed the hour with you guys.
You're certainly welcome.
Okay, bye-bye.
And join us for our daily news at freeenergynews.com. We invite you to see our directory of energy technologies at peswiki.com. That's peswiki.com. PES, the Pure Energy Systems Information Network.